Welcome to Uniquely Loved, a celebration of authenticity and divine inspiration. We are encouraged to be our own unique, authentic selves. Join me, Tech Witch Nikki, as we discuss spiritual gifts and skills we can develop and enhance, speak with amazing people using their skills in a variety of ways, and explore the different ways to connect to the wonders of the universe. Hello, my loves. I have a special treat for you today. I would like to introduce Karen DeLoach. Karen is an artist, an art mentor, actor, author, and creativity specialist. She teaches art history and appreciation in college using textbooks that she has written. Wow, Karen, thank you so much for being here today. Welcome.
Thank you so much. I was drawn to your podcast, Uniquely Loved. I that just touched my heart so much because, you know, my age, we realize life gets to the where it boils down to, wow, being uniquely loved is one of the most precious gifts of life. So I appreciated your title.
Thank you. One of my things is, you know, trying to help ensure that everyone realizes that they are, in fact, unconditionally loved for all our uniqueness, even if we consider them flaws.
You know, the fact that we've got, what, almost 8 billion people on the planet, and we've all got individual fingerprints. No two are alike. It's like, wow, we are totally unique. And as an artist, I so appreciate that. We had a photography teacher that took our picture and cut it in half and put it like, this is what you'd look like if both halves were this like this, and this is what you'd look like if, it's like, what? That's like three different people. So nothing is the same. So I like unique, uniquely loved. So great title.
Thank you. Oh man, you have done so much. You are inspirational. You really are.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, that's one advantage to having lived almost 70 years on the planet already. I got a chance. And, you know, as I was saying, my one of my art teachers in college told me that the only thing I had going for me was energy, which was like, what? You have no talent, no skill, but, you know, you have energy. And now, you know, it's like, I'm very grateful. Energy is a great gift. I'll take it.
It truly is, because energy can actually propel you forward when you hit those roadblocks or get frustrated.
Yep. Yep. It does. And keeps me moving, keeps me going. And I'm really joyful. And that's one of the advantages of being in the arts is you never have to retire, never have to stop painting. And as I read the lives of painters and share them with my students, you know, they were in wheelchairs going blind and you had sticks to get to the canvases, but they were still painting up until the end. And I love that. You never have to retire. Or some of my favorite filmmakers, you know, are in wheelchairs, but they're still directing. Or, you know, the arts are eternal. They live with us and leave a legacy. So I'm passionate about stirring up the creative in people. Every person is uniquely gifted in some creative ways, usually
totally.
More than one.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like you know, podcaster, painter, awesome, with mom and spouse and all of the different hats you wear, even podcasting, very creative.
Thank you. And you have worn so many hats, you know, for throughout your careers.
One wasn't enough, I guess. Probably the most important career. I'm sure you feel the same way, raising children. I have four children and we homeschooled, and I was the homeschool art teacher. And eventually, and this is one thing we were talking about, is in my 50s, I fulfilled a dream and I went to film school. We have a wonderful local film school here in the Low Country of South Carolina. And I took every class over the course of 4 years and learned everything I could. And it's such a vast field with so many different giftings required. I'd be like, okay, let me take, you know, photography. And no, I don't think I'm a camera person. Let me take sound. No, I don't think I'm the sound person. You know, I'll try directing and producing. Lighting bulbs. I wasn't even very good at script writing. But I love putting all the pieces together, which is what producers do. And I got to teach in a homeschool co-op and had all these students. And from start to finish, I'm like, you're going to do everything. from start to finish to create films, including the music and sound and writing the script and every part of it. And I'd have, you know, between 15 and 20 young people, and, you know, we'd end up with a product. And they always wanted, of course, to do vampire movies. That was probably we had a little basset hound that was in every movie. They'd dress him up, whatever. This little basset hound loved being with them in the scene. So yeah, those are exciting activities. And, you know, being in the arts, and I don't know anybody really in the arts that don't have multiple things they like to do artistically. You know, my sons and my husband are all musicians, but they also write, they compose, they draw, they create new storytellers. So these hats are related, let's just put it that way. And then the acting, that's just been part of my life since I was a little tiny girl. My dad was on vaudeville. And then I've recently found out my mother's father also was a musician and an entertainer. So it kind of runs in the blood. And when I train up my students and find out and release and kind of explore their own creativity, unique creativity, I'm always asking, what did you love to do before you were six? When you were five and six, what was exciting to you? What was fun? Was it climbing on the monkey bars? Was it banging on drums? I had one son that everything became a drum. Everything. His desk wasn't the place for books. It was a place to drum. Well, guess what he became? A drummer. He plays the piano too, and guitar, but that drumming thing really came out early. And what my mama tells the story of when I was little, and she gave me crayons and paper. Well, you know, the paper was just never big enough. And so guess what I got in trouble for? Drawing on the walls, coloring on the walls. I was in so much trouble. Of course, she couldn't know that eventually I would get paid to do murals on people's walls. I like working big. What can I say? So, you know, you can get some hints, you know, as you think about, well, I love dancing, you know, I love twirling. Twirling was like one of my favorite things. Do you still dance? There's no reason you can't, you know, there's little dance because we all can move to the music. We don't have to, even if something's wrong with our leg, we can still move, right? My knees complain if I do any jump, no jumping anymore, but we still like to move and dance. So, you know, that's one of the things we talk about. What did you love when you were little? So, Nikki, what did you love to do when you were little?
Wait, I have to remember that back that far. I know I made a lot of different stories, a lot of make-believe, a lot of, at that time, reading and drawing. In fact, my 10-year-old, we always called her a drama queen because she would always do the whole flair and everything. Everything she did it with drama. And it wasn't even something she picked up on TV or anything. It was just, I don't know, it was natural. She can watch kids bop shows where they're doing the dance moves and mimic them and copy them and learn how to dance. It's just like, whoa, girl. Awesome. She has a grace that's I awesome. Never had. And my six-year-old, my six-year-old is rambunctious. She's the drummer, she's the gymnast, she's the hard charger.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. The other thing I love to do was create playground dramas. You know, this is a spaceship, you know, this piece of equipment is a spaceship and you're the astronaut. Cause of course that was a big deal in the 60s, right? When the astronauts going up and so, yeah, you're an astronaut and you're a monster from outer space. Rah! And you're the damsel in distress because it was, you know, early on. And so I was always creating these plays. You're probably too young to remember Jerry's Kids, but Jerry Lewis used to do a telethon once a year for muscular dystrophy. And he had all these children on and he'd send you these little kits to do something to raise money for these children before the telethon. And I put on these backyard dramas and charged $1 for, you know, parents to come or 50 cents. And we had curtains for screens and we had, you know, we rewrote fairy tales. We, you know, whatever stories we wanted to do. And so, you know, becoming a director, producer of films was already there too. And so, you know, I just encourage your listeners, think about it. Think about what made you excited when you were little. What kind of things were filled you with joy? Because they still can, you know?
Oh, even definitely
our age.
Still, oh yeah. Joy. I like to tell people it's like just because we're adults, we still deserve and need recess. We still need to play. I mean, we need a break. Adulting is hard. Why make it harder?
And, and that's it. I get to teach something that's fun. Albert Einstein said that art is your imagination having fun. So creativity, it should be fun. It should be a fun outlet. It should feel like you're expressing something. And a lot of times it's through the decades. I've taught all ages, but I started out just teaching out of my studio, bringing homeschool kids to my house. It's like, you teach my child science, I'll teach your child art. Good deal. How about a language or whatever, So I ended up with pretty good representation of different students. And we didn't all bring our children home from homeschool because they're so brilliant, although they all are brilliant, of course. But mine being artsy, we weren't really thriving in our academics. Let me just put it that way. Very, very early on. And even in private school, we're not doing well. One with ADHD that, came home with, 5 hours of homework every night. I'm like, why am I paying for this if you're not gonna have to, I have to do it for you. It's just too many distractions. And he begged to come home, and I ended up bringing my rambunctious kid home too, kicking and screaming all the way. So, meeting other children that were homeschooled sometimes it's because they did have some kind of deficit, something that wasn't wired like everybody else. They ADHD is one common thing, or maybe dyslexia, different kinds of learning disabilities. And they would come into the studio feeling pretty defeated, frustrated parents trying their best and thrive in the arts. I taught painting, drawing, batik, ceramics, pottery, and they would thrive. And I watched that healing power of art as they got confidence. This success in this arena gave them confidence to tackle other things in their life. And this is kind of a sad story, but it ends well. One of my very favorite students who had all of these problems, and he was doing great in art. And I entered my students' work in a community youth art competition every year that was the best of the best of every school. And they would do so well, and he would do so well to the point he was thriving in being able to graduate from high school. And I entered his work, and he won not just first place, but best in show, best in the whole show. And then he got a traumatic brain injury just 3 months later. He had an infection that went to his brain and about destroyed his brain and his skull. He's got a plastic skull. They didn't know if he was going to live 4 months in the hospital and rehab. He came out, he couldn't talk, could barely walk, and his right hand wasn't working. So guess what his mom did? Brought him right back to the studio. I thought, okay, well, let's teach him to draw and write left-handed. And David did that so quickly. He was able to start drawing and painting and writing with his left hand as good as he was with his right hand. Now, he still wasn't able to do ceramics, which took a lot longer to do. But I got a call from his neurosurgeon. He's like, I've never called anybody's art teacher before. What are you doing with David? Because his left hand is strong, stronger than my weak hand, and I'm a surgeon. What are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. It's just working. As I've studied since, these neural connections we're always building, left and right brain, which you do because you're so much editing left brain, you're drawing and painting right, you're bringing these two sides, they're building these connections is what really builds our brilliance. And they were there. So he was able to wire his brain, a different part of his brain, to do some functions that weren't there. He was able to start talking. He was able to start walking.
And he is a walking, talking miracle. And his family still credits the, you know, he did all the medical things. You know, I'm not saying, I'm not negating that, but he also got his emotions and his mind and his art connections going and, you know, has a life worth living that was not expected. So I'm like, yay, go arts, you know, wonderful right brain. And he and his family obviously are still very dear and close to me. You know, and then another story. So this is when I'm starting looking, you know, this is kind of miraculous what's happening. And these are not people who are identifying as artists. Okay. I want to make that clear. These are just normal people who just love to draw and paint. You know, they're not looking to sell their work in the marketplace or become a professional artist. They are looking just to have a fulfilled life, you know, a full, mm-hmm. complete, purposeful life. So I had another adult mother, because I also, when the moms would bring them, I'd say, well, you're going to be here. Why don't you just participate? Discovered all kinds of talents and all these amazing, amazing moms, usually moms, once in a while a dad, but mostly moms. And this particular woman was just so good at sculpture. She was so good with her hands. And then she was diagnosed with very severe breast cancer, like given 6 months, life expectancy kind of diagnosis. And in their devastation, she's doing all the chemo, radiation, getting sick, surgeries. So I said, I have a challenge for you, Jan. I've got a show in 9 months and I need your help. I'm doing a whole room installation called Taste and See Sweet Shop, The Good Things in Life. It's a porcelain candy store. And we're going to make every one of these by hand. And I made the trays and the pedestals, and we bought furniture from Goodwill and redid them, you know, refinished them, you know, put new tops on them, made silks wall hangings. And she said, okay, I don't know if I'll be here in 9 months, but I'm gonna come to the studio. So every day she wasn't really sick or doing something, she was in the studio hours at a time working with her hands, doing these beautiful things. We made cakes and cupcakes and candies and cookies and all kinds of goodies, and made them look real, made them look so real. People thought they were coming in to buy chocolates. I'm like, yeah, you can buy them. They're for sale. Just don't bite them. They'll break your teeth off. And I'm happy to say that when we had that show, she was there all 17 days in remission. And now 9 years later is completely cancer free. She's had, she's not just in relapse or whatever. She is cancer free.
Awesome.
And I talked to her recently and she said she credits having something to focus on that was beautiful, that was hopeful, that was, gave her something to work towards, just changed that whole season that could have just been misery and depression, got her out of that depression, gave her hope, and her whole family, it affected her whole family. And, you know, I'm just saying, wow. Go God, that is awesome. This creativity that is in us that we got from our creator is in everybody. And you are uniquely loved with blessings of creativity yourself. What is it? What is it? Do you know? Do you not know? Is it something you want to explore? You know, that's what I love to do, is to help people discover, uncover, train up, and operate in their very best creative, unique life. Any age, all ages, whatever deficits or challenges. I got one more story, and this one's more personal, because I loved sports and I loved theater and I loved art, and I didn't know what to study in school. So I went to a college, liberal arts, where I could do all of them. I could do all of them. And I loved to draw, and drawing, I'd had good drawing and drawing teacher. And so I felt like I was pretty good at drawing, but I had really never explored painting. And this is in the 70s, because I'm 70. So I was 18 in the 70s. And they were all trained by the abstract expressionists, these painters, these art. And I tried four different painting teachers in the course of 2 years. And they all came to the same conclusion, using four letter words to describe my art, that I could not paint, that I was not good enough.
Well, this little girl, sensitive, right brain person, took that in and came into agreement with it.
And
for the next decade, as I tried to paint, it couldn't get it, couldn't push through those difficult parts. It was that voice, you're not good enough. Just stick to sculpture. Because I switched to sculpture in graduate school and art history. But I wanted to paint. I started having these beautiful little babies and I wanted to paint them. And I like to paint naturalistically. I don't want to paint abstract expression. I can do that. I painted abstract expressionist paintings and sold them to stores to buy my canvases and frames when I was in graduate school. But I really wanted to paint more. I wanted it to look like my babies.
Right.
And it wasn't popular. You know, it wasn't what they wanted me to do, but it was what I wanted to do. And I was completely convinced I wasn't a painter. You know, and I know there's a lot of your listeners saying, I can't draw, you know, I can't color, I can't paint, I can't dance, I can't sing, I can't draw, whatever. And somebody's told them, and that I call it the left brain bully. It mm-hmm. tells you not good enough, you know, and sometimes we get perfectionism and that paralyzes us. We get perfectionism paralysis mm-hmm. and we can't do it because we're not perfect when we try it. You know, and I say, well, I'm a practicing artist because I'm always practicing. But I got a mentor. I came across a mentor when I lived in Germany. I was army wife at the time. And he had been to the Chicago Art Institute where they actually teach the fundamentals. And he taught me how to paint.
Awesome.
I learned the color wheel, color theory. I learned how to mix and match and really develop the skills I needed to do the kind of painting I wanted to do. And it changed my life. I got set free and I could say, shut up, you're wrong. You know, I can't be good enough. And you know, just keep working it until I got my skills up to my vision, you know, what I wanted to do. And so I'm really passionate about mentoring. That's one reason, because I see personally how it can change your life. You know, and I'm an award-winning painter and people have paid me big bucks to paint murals, and I just did a big landscape. I love landscapes too. I love doing nature. I love nature. I see your big tree. I have earrings like that with the tree of life on them. Yeah. Nature, anything beautiful. Mm-hmm. And you know what I've been learning in the last really year and a half about artist self-therapy and how you can get wellness through creativity. So some of you may, you know, have some struggles mentally, emotionally, physically. And you know, and there's medicines, there's things that, you know, the medical world recommends. I don't know nothing about any of that, I'll tell you, but I have seen and had proven to me the power of exploring your creative gifts and how it can lift you. Well, it turns out, as I've been studying the scientists, just looking at art releases serotonin, the happiness chemical, but doing it multiplies it. Just trying it, scribbling, coloring, doodling, or maybe just journaling, just writing. Mm-hmm. And what they tell you is don't edit, don't criticize, and don't, you know, shut down that voice that tells you, oh, that's terrible. Man, man, man. You know, when I teach, and I learned this a long time ago, this is a safe space. This is a no criticism zone. Yes, they tried to teach me painting through criticism. It did not work. I'm telling you, it did not make me a better artist. It shut me completely down. Right. Our right brain, our creative centers are sensitive, intuitive. They're imaginative. They're inventive. And that's a gentle process that needs to be unfolded and blossom like a beautiful flower, treated gently and nurtured and watered and pruned. That is the way it can grow and be its full beautiful self. And you're not too old. It's never too late. I'm telling you, as someone who went to school in my 50s, I still had kids at home even, you know, but it's never too late. You can do this. You can explore this beautiful creative world that is just dying to come out and be expressed through you.
There's so many ways to do it. And I've got this, what we call pop-up podcast. Since you're a podcaster, it's a three-part free series about artist self-therapy. And it's got a case for why everyone is creative. And then the second one is all these ideas that you can implement in your life, simple things to do. And then the third one is giving you the science that I've learned about what happens in the brain. Now, I'm not a scientist. And I'm sure anybody who is going, oh, she's making this sound too simple, left brain, right brain. You know, the point is we want them to connect and be working together. Mm-hmm. And that we have an education system in our country that really dwells on the left brain.
Oh, yeah.
You know, for instance, you ask a room of 5 and 6-year-olds, you know, you like to drum, you like to run around, you like to climb, you like to color, you like to sing, you like to dance. What do they say? Is there one that says no? Rarely. Rarely does one ever say no. They don't like to do any of that
stuff. I don't
think
they would ever say no, because they
I've never heard any say no. But ask that same question to a room of 15 and 16 year olds, even as they're listening to Led Zeppelin on their headphones. No. Maybe 10% say yes. What happens in those 10 years? Now, I blame it a lot on our school system, because they're developing that critical thinking, logical, orderly, chronological memorization side of the brain, which makes them highly employable. But, you know, it, not that AI couldn't take those jobs away from them. And at the least trivialize the left brain creative gifts. They're much harder to grade. Trust me. You know, if my students do what I ask them to do in a timely manner, they're getting 100. I'm not saying, you know, one is really good and one's really, I'm not judging their talent. I'm judging them on their effort and what they're, are they following the directions? Because you know what? They're going to get better if they follow my directions. I make them do art. And my college students have to do art. They have to do it. They don't just look at, I mean, my book, I wrote a book because I live in South Carolina. My students are in the heart of a rural part of the state. They've never been doing, most of them never been to an art gallery or a museum. Most of them don't even have an opinion about art, hardly know anything about Western art history. So my book, which is 630 pages, has 1,800 images. If they may not read it, but they're going to look at pictures, and I make them find something they like. I have a whole chapter all on contemporary artists. A lot of them are local. They're representing things that these young people can relate to in their world, in their culture, what they've grown up with. I've got a great ethnic mix of young people, and they're going to find somebody whose work they can relate to or story they can relate to. I've got a lot of stories in my book.
Awesome.
Artists. And then how to draw, they're going to have to try it. And, you know, they just get amazed. It's like, once you've had this like veil off your eyes, wow, not only is there's beauty in art, there's beauty, I can relate to it. There's artists that are expressing what I want to express, or I feel, or where I come from, you know, even if it's anger or, you know, sorrow over historical things, or, you know, but let's celebrate life together and our uniquely beautiful ways that we can love each other and love the world, and, you know, come together and say we're uniquely different and we're uniquely loved. It's you know, like I said, I was so drawn to you because of that, just the way that you put, you know, we're uniquely loved, you know. And so to finish your story, you know, to finish that, you know, I'm on a mission to stir up the creative in others, because I see what it can do in our hearts and our minds and our lives, bring joy any age. And if you've had trauma through somebody telling you can't draw, for me, it was also growing up, every time I tried to sing, I wanted to be a Broadway actress. That was my first, you know, what do you want to be? I want to be a star. I want to be a Broadway actress. Well, you can't sing. Every time I open my mouth, I just couldn't seem to keep on the same key. I didn't know that was something you could learn. I just knew that it didn't come natural. The low voice, oh, you know, they just kind of went everywhere. I tried though, man. I broke records, though. I broke people's eardrums. They would turn on the radio if I started singing. But, you know, eventually you become convinced, okay, I'm not going to be a Broadway actress. I can't sing, you know, all right, that's not there. Until I started singing in the shower, and singing along with songs that I started learning in church, these little choruses. I'm like, oh, wow, they only have like 3 or 4 notes. I can do that. I can sing those notes. I can stay there. Wow, I can sing good. I got power. I can sing loud. And I started, you know, getting to do some musicals, you know, and when I got older, doing some musical things because I can belt it and I can memorize and learn the notes. Wow, you can learn how. And then last year, I started studying these scientists. Do you know that they've studied people that sing in the shower? They study what happens in your brain when you sing in the shower. Now, this is so cool. All right, so there you are, you know, rub-a-dub-dub, scrub it in the tub, and you're singing your favorite song or just something that come on the radio and you're singing along, you know, and you're not thinking about anything. And you get out and you're drying off and something comes to your mind that you hadn't thought about. Maybe it's a solution to a situation with one of your kids or something from work. Just something comes to mind. You know, I hadn't thought of that before. Boom, boom, boom. And you didn't even put together that while your brain, your left brain was resting, mm-hmm. you weren't trying to be logical. You weren't trying to figure anything out. And your right brain is just having fun, letting the notes come out. Nobody's there to criticize. There's no criticism zone. You've created your own behind that shower curtain or that in that tub. Nobody's listening. And your brain is making connections it hadn't made before.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen, sing in the shower. Let it rip. Don't let anybody stop you because you are doing your brain some good. You don't know what you're doing there.
Definitely. Definitely. I love to tell people, hey, the more you're in the moment, you know, the more inspiration will strike.
And, you know, and as you say that, Nikki, I've been studying the science. There's science behind it. There's actually a whole field called neuroarts.
Awesome.
They're studying the power of art to heal, and it can heal emotionally, mentally, physically, spiritually. One of the things that I read about was Walter Reed Hospital. Speaking mm-hmm. of, you know, we've had some military background where they were bringing soldiers who, you know, had their wounds healed maybe, but, or at least their physical injuries dealt with, but they were still struggling with all kinds of traumas from war and in the injuries themselves. And they were doing experiments on different kinds of therapies at Walter Reed one summer. And I imagine they've continued it. The one I was reading about when they were having success with these troops, you know, getting some healing, and they did a survey, what was the best part of it? And above anything else was the art, doing art. And these are soldiers. These are not people identifying as artistes. These are people who found peace. They found some kind of contentment. They found some kind of acceptance of what was going on in their life now through creating.
Mm-hmm.
That just warms my heart all over.
I know it's definitely helped me.
Yeah, what's your story? Tell me more of your story about that.
Ooh, retired Army, worked on the Apache helicopter, deployed a couple times. Prolonged PTSD due to other factors, not just being deployed, extremely toxic relationships and toxic employment throughout, you know, whether it be the military or even after and everything. Mm-hmm. And healing has been a challenge. I did attempt to not be here quite a few years ago. And my healing journey led me to doing everything I'm doing now, and it led me to getting creative and finding the little joys, because the more we cultivate the little joys in each day, it makes them the whole day. Even if you have a few bad moments, you can be like, well, I did this and that was fun, so the whole day's not gone, the whole day's not bad. And then that shifts to, huh, I had a few bad months, years, etc. My whole life's not bad. I'm doing this. I'm healing. I'm great. I may not be where I want to be, but yeah.
Yeah.
I'm better. I see I'm getting better.
Beautiful. Yeah. It's amazing, because if you've grown up in an education system that trivializes the arts, mm-hmm. it may not be something you consider important enough to try, or that, you know, you've got too much, too busy. And this is the other thing, is they're all saying, and I read different studies, between 15 or 18 and 20 minutes a day is all it requires.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of time.
Something as simple, and I can tell you this for your viewers, something as simple as taking a stroll. Now, you're talking about being in the moment, and that's what I'm talking about. Not with your Fitbit, where you're going to have your steps counted, and you're going to get aerobics, and how many calories am I going to burn? No, this is a stroll. This is where you just, like my 92-year-old mother lives with me, we're just going for a stroll. You know, she walks pretty good pace, let me tell you, she does. But we're going to look at the sky. We're going to look at the neighbors walking their dogs. We're going to have a chat. We're going to smell the roses. We've already got daffodils blooming here in South Carolina. And we've got roses that bloom almost all year. And we're smelling, we're seeing children play, dogs, bicyclers. You're just engaging in nature, in the world. And we have a park where you can, you know, maybe notice the trees. We have lots of trees around here, including palmetto trees we're famous for. And those, just those moments, you're resting your left brain, even mm-hmm. as you're using it to walk, because your left brain controls motor. Sorry if I'm sounding simplistic, you neuroscientists, but you're walking. So you're using this part of your brain. And as you're observing and noticing and feeling, seeing the beauty, you're making again, these connections, these divine, these incredible neuro connections. If you do sunset, sunrise, notice the colors in the sky and how it reflects on the clouds and these things, just doing that once a day.
Yep.
Brings peace, restoration, joy, a release of serotonin. Woo! It also decreases cortisol. I mean, we got to have cortisol, but too much of it, is a stress thing, I guess. Mm-hmm. You don't want all that cortisol. You want to de-stress, rest it. And it doesn't sound like an artistic thing to do, but it is using your both sides of your brain to be observant, you know, to notice what's going on around you. And it's good for you. It's better probably than if you were power walking. Not that you can't power walk too, but take that time for your own soul's sake, for your own mind and emotion and will. And, you know, I'm a spiritual person, and I want to hear from the higher power, whatever you want to call God. I want to hear. And as we rest that critical thinking side of our brain and our mind, mm-hmm. we release that stress. We can hear better. We can hear for our life better. And I believe it, and I've experienced it, and I know it's true for everybody because we're all uniquely loved.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've experienced it too. And it was an eye-opening experience when I finally was able to hush out my inner critic and be like, wait a minute. Cause the intuitive voice is soft and gentle and loving and, you know, keep going.
It is. And I'm changed, and it has affected my life. And, you know, when you can walk in your true self, in your true loved self, when you know you're loved and you're valuable and you have worth and you have purpose and you have destiny and you have legacy to leave others, then it can help you out of those pits, places that we've all experienced in our life. Mm-hmm. I spent about 500 hours on one project. It was a giant piece of sculpture that I did. And it was really brilliant idea. I was making, this big sculpture, and it took a lot to get it to, it got into a show, you know, so it won a place in a juried show, and I got it there, and they had some big money for their prize money. I just knew this sculpture was going to win because it was really a pinnacle of my ideas. And there was some technical issues with it, I'll be honest. You know, it was an experiment, and it wasn't perfect, but it was spectacular. It won nothing. I'd put everything I had for 3 solid months into this project, and it was out of porcelain. It made out of ceramics, low fire ceramics. And I was devastated when it didn't win. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe how much it affected me that it didn't win, because I was so excited. And not only that, getting it home, I got help, and it was strapped so tight to the frame that when it went over a bad railroad track, it's just like downtown Charleston, the houses that don't move, mm-hmm. don't survive earthquakes, but the ones that have some, you know,
traction, they can survive it. Mm-hmm. This thing collapsed coming out. The sculpture collapsed coming out. And it was like that. It was my dreams, my hopes, my ideas just collapsed right with it. I mean, getting up from that was really hard artistically because I had so much hope, you know, this is later in life and all my skills are coming together to make this incredible piece of sculpture. And I was devastated. And so I understand how discouraging it can be, you know, to build, pick back up from any kind of defeat. And sometimes it's relational, you know, I've been divorced. I had two little boys, you know. At 40, my army husband left me for a 20-year-old and a 1-year-old, a 3-year-old, little boys, and devastated us and rebuilt life, you know, and found a great, loving, faithful husband. And we had two children together and, you know, helped me raise those little boys. And believe it or not, my ex is one of our best friends. He's had a real change of heart in his life and he wanted to be in his son's lives. And, you know, we let him and now we have grandchildren together. So, you know, my husband now, it's almost 32 years, you know, finding joy in marriage is has its own challenges. And what marriage doesn't have ups and downs and ins and outs, right? Mm-hmm. But it's worth it. It's worth it when you're just sitting on the other side going, we've survived some rough stuff and here we are, you know, to live and laugh again and have joy.
So. Yes. And it does get better. It does.
It does. You know, you persevere. I remember on the hearing a radio program where this couple had been married for 75 years. And of course there is, what is the key to your longevity? And they turned and looked at each other and said, neither one of us would leave. Obviously they had a sense of humor and they weren't just roommates. They were companions. They were friends. So, you know, it's all these things of life that we, you know, find our way to be uniquely loved and receive it and accept it and give it, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Wow. And okay, you mentioned your book, but you didn't mention the title or where to find it.
Yeah, How to Draw is on Amazon. How to Draw, okay. Karen DeLoach. My program, Art as Self Therapy and Wellness Through Creativity, is just an exciting program. I've been working one on one with people, and they can reach me through my email, KarenDeLoachArt.com. And then this pop up podcast that I was describing is being launched in probably another week. I'm almost got all the technical parts put together. That was the hard part for me, all the technology to get it. So it would be a free release for 3 days of these 20-minute podcasts that awesome. Talk more about what we've been talking about today. And it'll be received through getcreativewithkaren.com. So this pieces will be put together pretty soon.
Now, Get Creative With is with fully spelled out?
Yes. Okay. Getcreativewithkaren.com.
I will definitely be checking that out and I'm going to download it for my daughter.
Ooh, yes, yes. And you know, we should talk. We should talk again how I can help maybe work with your daughter some more too. So there's all kinds of possibilities. Yeah, I've worked with all ages. I have a year program that I've been working with a whole family and, you know, then it's like, well, you're my family now. You're just any family. I get involved. It's so personal and intimate when you're working in the arts and creativity. You get close to people, and because you're opening up your heart, you're opening up your soul, you're opening up parts of you that you're wanting to bring expression to. And, you know, that's part of the power of the art, is we release those hidden hurt things and find a way to release it. And it doesn't have to be, you know, directly, like I'm going to show a picture of what happened to me. It can be my husband, who had a terrible, terribly abusive childhood, was even dissociated from a lot of the memories until we watched it unfold. I've watched him grow into who he was always meant to be. He's doing it through a fairy tale. He's writing and illustrating a fairy tale that is his story. It is this little boy that, you know, he only discovered about 10 years ago was still in the closet and to release them and bring them into himself. And so he's finding a way to tell this story that is therapeutic and I know other people could relate to as well. I'm looking forward to it. It's he has to be in the mood. I'm one of those people, I make myself work sometimes. Like writing that 600-page book took, 12 to 14 hours a day. I was like, we're going to focus. And again, fortunately, I didn't have any small children because the house could have burned down while I was trying to get it put together. But he has to have kind of, peaceful circumstance, not be distracted or anything else going on to get his writing done. But we're all uniquely different, uniquely loved.
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh, and is Get Creative with Karen your main website?
Well, it's I'm on ClickFunnels, so it'll be the connection to the podcast, to the okay. podcast. I've got things in place. I just have to put all the technical, now you need Hello Audio to do this part, and you need Zapier to do that part, and you need ActiveCampaign for this part. I'm like, okay, I'm working it as hard as I can, I promise. I didn't know it's gonna take me so long, but I do love, being a podcast guest, and it's a way I'm getting a wider audience of people to find me, and me find people that I can help and explore to find their best joyful loved self. And it's fun, have more fun in life. Mm-hmm. it's worth it.
Oh, definitely. And you help people over Zoom, don't you?
I do. So the world has opened up. Yeah, I learned like the rest of the world how to do. I'm like, how do I teach visual arts over the computer? I had to learn how to do this. You know what? It's easier for my book is my art history and appreciation textbook is an ebook. And so I can pull up the images. I can show them what part I'm talking about. I can, so it's not just a book on a page. The first edition had a hard copy and then a second edition that just came out is just an ebook. You awesome. Just scroll it. It's not even page aided. What do you mean no pages? I got to have pages. Just scroll. It's like, I like pages. And I'm old fashioned that way. I'm like, can you at least print me one book? I hope I still hope they will. The publishers actually own that book. I get the royalty check, but they approached me and paid for all those images. It costs a lot of money to print famous pictures. A lot of money. Just the Mona Lisa is expensive, but mm-hmm. anyway. It's worth it.
Oh, definitely.
I tell people, you have an opinion about what music you like. Do you have an opinion about what art you like? How come? Maybe you don't see all the choices. You haven't seen lots of choices. For a long time, it felt like to me, like 80s, 90s, thousands, art was so ugly. The art people were making in galleries and famous museums just wasn't celebrating the beauty in life at all. And I was very discouraged about that because I'm a chronic museum and gallery goer. I mean, if I don't get to at least one a month, I'm like jonesing for, seeing more art, at least in person and not just online and see it online all the time. Mm-hmm. But people don't know what they like. They don't even know what choices there are. And so I love that we can, explore and open that up. I don't make my students go to a gallery, but they don't have to take the final quiz if they go. Well, guess what? Most of them choose to go to a gallery because every little town has some artist showing their work somewhere. Yep. Even in rural South Carolina, they can find art. And guess what? It's art of their locality. It's art maybe they can relate to, of peers, of people that have worked hard to enjoy their culture. And we have a beautiful museum in Columbia, South Carolina. They're only an hour away from. They give $5 for students. They even have a free day every month, and I advertise that to the class. Charleston does the same thing, first Friday, so they open the galleries late, and now they have snacks again. They didn't after COVID for a few years, but now they got their snacks back, and you can even have some punch and meet the artists and, talk to them and see what you like and buy postcards. Some of them have little cards or postcards. You don't have to spend a lot of money. Sometimes, you can buy some art prints, that you don't have to spend a lot of money on.
Mm-hmm.
So I recommend that for everybody. Put art on your walls. Find what you love and what brings you joy and put it up. That'll encourage you every day.
Oh, yeah. And the more people can find other like artists, regardless of the genre of art that they relate to, then it inspires them. It's like, wait, if they can do that, can I do that? Yeah, I'm going to try.
And abstract expressionism, I love it too. It just isn't my favorite art to do, but I do love it. I have some abstract expressionist art on my walls. And I remember as a child, my parents had some, just looking at it for hours, trying to see what I could see and get lost in it, you know, using your imagination, which is a place of brilliance that all of us have. So
yes.
I say that to encourage you, everyone here, all your listeners, you have it. You are uniquely qualified to be creative in your own way.
Definitely.
So explore it. Find out what it is.
And you help bring out that each individual's unique brilliance.
That's one of my joys in life to do. And I love to see it and see how it can bring, you know, joy and healing and fulfillment. Because, you know, there's a part of us, it is never going to be replaced by AI. We mentioned that a little bit. AI is really brilliant at doing a lot of jobs that most of us don't even want to do anymore. And I use it, ChatGPT, to get some ideas when I'm writing. So I think it's a great tool. But just to release you from any fear, it's not human. It's not going to replace humans. It's not going to replace your humanity. It's not going to replace your imagination and your creativity. You know, because they have programs that can make perfect art, you know, with these computers, you know, because it follows the rules of design and, you know, rule of thirds, and, you know, can do all the things that, you know, I can teach my students, you know, the principles of design. Mm-hmm. And these computers can do that, but they're missing that human spark of life and soul, if you want, you know, that it's hard to grade, hard to scale and grade, because, you know, if you like it, it's worth it. It doesn't have to be what I like. You know, when you go to college and you get your degrees in art, you can get real snobby about art, you know, and I've met many snobs until I went to ceramics. The ceramic artists were not snobs. They were all in the clay, all full of mud. So, you know, there wasn't the same kind of snobbery there as there was in the painting professors. But anyway, and I realized when I was a military wife and this family went to one of those art fairs they always have at those army bases, and people go and find, you know, they got inspired by me and brought home this painting that was pretty much the colors of your shirt right now, but full of oranges and bright turquoises. And they were so excited about this painting hung on the back of their couch. And quite frankly, artistically, if I had gone with what my prideful teachers would have had me say, it would have devastated them. And I stood there saying, I've got to find something really good to say. I've got to find a way to, you know, really encourage them. And I did. This is so bright, so full of warmth and life. And you know what? The more I talked it up, the better that painting looked to me. I realized, you know, I needed an attitude adjustment myself. And I thought I could never live with that painting behind my couch. But, you know, the more I talked it up to them, and they were so excited. They had bought their first piece of, you know, original art. And they were thrilled with it. Can you imagine if I had stood there and said, oh my gosh, this is disgusting, you know? How awful that would have been for them. Mm-hmm. They'd have been devastated. And yet how many of us have had experiences like that where our precious, sensitive, creative side got shot down and pretty much a faith fatality. For very many people.
Oh yeah.
One lady tell me that in third grade, she was coloring and her teacher was, you know, gave him an assignment to do this coloring. And she just started going with this outside the lines, you know, creating little shapes and just having the best time. And when she turned this in, that paper was ripped up in front of the class.
Ooh.
As a complete failure. So now, I mean, she said years later, someone said, oh, can you color this one? She says, no, I can't color. She was convinced she couldn't color.
Mm-hmm.
That teacher should be disbarred. I mean, it breaks my heart. how many people tell me they had some kind of experience like that, whether it was they can't sing, they can't dance, they can't draw, they can't paint, they can't color. Come on, that's so not true.
Especially when you're looking at it from one person's perspective. And it's like, everyone has their own opinion. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion. However, when you come from the heart, you're going to appeal to the people who match your heart.
That's very good.
And other people are going to be like, oh, that is awesome. Where can I get that? Or can you do this?
I know. It's why I became the kind of teacher. And, you know, when Bob Brown taught me to paint, yes, he made me a better painter, but he really made me a better teacher. You know, as I started learning, wow, I wasn't even conscious of the fact that those words had shut me down. I didn't know why I couldn't get better. I couldn't overcome those obstacles. I didn't have a conscious reason. I just had accepted I wasn't good enough. I could never paint good enough, even though, oh, I'd pick it up and had all these unfinished paintings. And when he taught me the skills I needed to do the work I wanted to do, I realized, wow. And then through the years as an art teacher, I have these techniques I teach that can teach people to draw, anybody to draw. But I didn't know that. I didn't always know that, because there were some boys I taught, they were in my studio, and they were that when we did the co-ops, and I'm teaching the same exercises, no matter the age. It's like everybody learned to play the piano. Does it matter if you're 5 or 15 or 25 or 35 or 45 if you're learning to play the piano? No, you still got to learn where the keys are, where your fingers go, right? There's certain things. The same thing with the painting and drawing. Doesn't matter your age.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't getting it. Now, they were having a good time. They were doing the drawing, but they just weren't getting it. You know what I mean? Getting it. It wasn't clicking. It wasn't making sense. Then something happened to them over the summer. They're middle schoolers by this time, maybe 10 or 11. They came back and they were doing the they were drawing no problem, like it was nothing. And they weren't even aware that they had improved that much. they were doing this last year. Mm-hmm. And then of course I start studying. There's a part of the brain, especially in boys, that takes longer to develop. And for them, they weren't seeing it as wrong. But if I had been telling them anywhere part of that, oh, you just can't draw, or I became convinced there's some people that just never would get it, which that was crossing my mind. I have to be honest. It was crossing my mind. Well, I guess there's some people that are just never going to get this. When that happened, I realized, whoa, everybody can learn to draw if they want to. If they apply themselves, they can. Everybody can learn to paint. You can learn to paint. You can learn to sculpt. You can learn to sing. You can learn to play the piano. You can learn to play the guitar. You can learn to write. These are learnable skills. And that's exciting. There's no limit. There's no limit. We take the limits off because you're each uniquely loved.
So. I love that.
I think I've gone over time now.
That is A-okay. Now, you mentioned earlier that you are raising money for a special project that's near and dear to your heart. Could you tell us about it?
Absolutely. I had the privilege in the fall of 22, for the first time in my life, to go to Africa. Friend was connected to a pastor's ministry that they were rescuing these young people from literally some of the most horrific experiences. We've read about them. We've heard about them. But I met these young people. And their joy and joy of life, even though they got maybe fed once a day, they never had enough food. They were safe. They had to have a wall with barbed wire and a guard over this facility. And everything happened in the same building, you know. And anyway, being there was a unique experience. But I was teaching them art. They, you know, and I'm used to teaching an hour, hour and a half at the most, you know, teaching exercises. And I had brought like a suitcase full of supplies of art materials. They went through everything I had. They didn't want to stop. They wanted, now we did like 4 hours of art together that day. I was exhausted before they were. And then they were so excited. I got some cool pictures. If you go to my Facebook picture, you'll see some pictures from these Ugandan youths. And their pastor has a heart for them, for filmmaking, because of their stories, their incredible stories. And now they're full-blown evangelists. They're so full of joy. I also, while I was there, I got to judge a talent competition. It wasn't just those young people, but young people from schools in the area, all over the place. And there was some good prize money because we brought the prize money with us. We were prepared. We brought the prize money. And we brought one somebody had donated a whole bunch of soccer balls. And of course they were deflated and we brought the pumps and they were using like rags bundled up as their soccer ball in these dirt lots, you know? And so these balls were like, oh my gosh, like gold. They were so, so well received. But I got the privilege of 8 hours a day judging this talent competition in tears. And I had set it up because I've been a judge in art competitions before, and I knew how to set up a criteria that we could all, you know, 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 in each of these categories. So we didn't have to say they're the best, they're second, they're third. We could really have a strategic way of judging them. Mm-hmm. And I saw them dance and sing, and they did native dances. They did modern dances. They told stories. They combined singing and dancing and storytelling together. It was amazing. I'm like, we got to film all of this. We got to do this. And we discussed, you know, creating a film school for these young people. And they just were able to get internet. It doesn't always work, I'll be honest. We try to meet every week, at least once a week. They also have what they call Ugandan time, which, okay, it's going to be 7:30 my time because they're right now 8 hours ahead of us late in the afternoon. But so many other things can happen that sometimes I'm waiting an hour or 2 hours, and, you know, or they can't get online, or whatever. Electricity sometimes goes off. And we've had fun in the last year raising money. We've been able to buy them a lens. They had an old camera and the lens was broken. We raised money for that. We raised money for sound for a boom pole, boom. Raised money for a beautiful lens connection. Right now, they really need a computer for editing. They have an old computer. And if you've tried to edit on an old computer, you know that we're talking hours. Hours. Oh, yeah. And then... I want them to get a phone because I think there's so much you can do with these phones nowadays that can go in the bush, and you don't have to have all the electricity. You don't have to have the lighting. You don't have to have a lot of the equipment if you just have a really good Max phone. And so that's, I'm kind of always raising money, because the other thing I raise money for is to supply food for these shoots, because they go out and they don't have water. They don't have food. They're just doing it, you know. They're doing their own costuming, and you know, they're doing it themselves. And I want to provide as much as possible. And every dime I get I send to them. And, you know, there is a transition fee, you know, with using WISE, with translating it into Ugandan money. But that's it. That's the only money that doesn't go straight to them. Every bit of it that I can collect. I can't give, I'm not a 501c3, so I can't give you a tax deduction, but if anybody wants to contact me through the email, and, you know, we'll figure out Venmo or Zelle or Cash App some way. And, I can send you pictures of what we get with it. So.
Awesome. Can you state your email again?
Yes. KarenDelocheArt@gmail.com.
Okay. And I will be putting all the links in the description of this episode, so you can just scroll and then be able to click and check out all of her awesome projects. And I cannot wait till your pop-up podcast gets released.
I know. I hope in another week it'll be ready. That's my goal. So thank you so much. Appreciate you having me, Nikki. This has been a joy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for being a guest and sharing all of this. And I appreciate you.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining me today as we explore what makes us uniquely loved. Be sure to subscribe. More adventure awaits. For more articles and to work with me as your personal guide, go to www.techwitchlayer.com. Always remember, you are accepted. You are valid. You are loved.